Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. This week is a very special week. I am in studio with one of the most innovative and thrilling American poets of our moment, Dorian Lux. So welcome, Dorian, to Voice Rising. I'm really excited to have you here with me today.
Oh, thank you so much, Kara.
So let me dive in here. One of the reasons that your work is admired by so many people is that your poems literally sing off the page, and you draw us in line by line with a quick-witted, compassionate genius for phrasing. You find rhyme and hooks that draw us in and yet never compromise the clarity of your text. Your writing is very sensual. I can attest to that because I've had the pleasure of reading some of your poems, and they're incredibly sensual. They work well with the tongue, and your vocabulary is distinct and precise, and I want to know your trick to getting the words to sing off pages.
Wow, that is such a lovely, lovely compliment. Thank you so much. And it's so important to me because I grew up in a musical family, and my mother played classical piano when I was growing up. And so before I could even speak, you know, I knew music. And music is all about phrasing and rhythm and sound and creating emotion through sound. And so I think her music taught me so much about language and the power of our voices to create a kind of music on their own without instrumentation.
Beautiful. Yeah. You said in the Poet's Companion, A Guide to Pleasures of Writing Poetry, which is a great book for all our listeners, that you said also that every good poem asks a good question, and every good poet needs to ask also those good questions. And that was another thing I was curious about, is how do you hone into what it means to, especially while I'm asking you questions, what is a good question? How do we know where to begin?
Well, the great poet Stanley Kunitz said there are three great questions, you know, that every poet should ask themselves, which is, who am I? Mm-hmm. Why am I here? And where am I going? And so those questions are often in my mind when I write a poem. It might be the same as a story writer asking, what does my character want? And that motivates the character and creates tension. And I think in poetry, it's who am I? You know, why have I been put here on this earth to do what? You know, and where am I going on this earth? And those are large, of course, questions that may not seem when you read a poem. That the poem is asking, but I think it underlies the core of every human being on earth.
Right, the search, right? The seeker in us all.
Yes.
I was trying to answer those in my head while you were speaking, and I was thinking, who am I? I don't know yet. Mm-hmm. Where am I going? Mm-hmm. It seems to be an ever non-ending river of zigzags that take me forward. And, having the luxury, actually, of diving into your poetry these past weeks, one of the other gifts that poets have is the ability to really name things as they are, from a cobblestone to regret to the cracked windows and the gibbous moons and the ragweeds and the kiss that we missed and all those things, just naming it without trying to put sugar coating on it. Do you see living life as a poet as a spiritual path?
I do. When I sit down, even in the act itself, when I sit down to write, it's like I'm meditating. It's like I'm speaking into this great grand void and asking to be answered. And a calm comes over me, as it would if you were meditating. My heart slows and I begin to feel the vibrations of the world around me, and it enters me. I become permeable in the way that you would become permeable in prayer if you're truly dedicated. And so the act itself is very spiritual. And then the act of course, putting it on the page and maybe reading it aloud or sending those poems out into the world are like the call and response that you might, feel when you're in a holy place with others. That call and response that fills the room with our mutual quest, which is to be the best, stroke of light on the earth that we can be. So right. I do see it as a very spiritual act and spiritual even in its, its making and giving away of itself.
Right. And is the presence that comes from word, the presence that a poem has to survive even the death of a poet, the presence that those words carry, does that come when we surrender to the unconditional love of really naming it like it is, like really not judging the sticky mud as something that often gets judged as dirty or ugly, and just... that's what I've always loved about good poetry, is this courage to not place judgment on the reality. It's just a witness. It's a watcher. It is a co-creator, but not a, not trying to say that the chocolate ice cream is better than the mango chili ice cream. It's not trying to influence the perceptions in a way to make it all goody two shoes. It's just like really, there's something very, I can't explain it. Good poetry is like it's raw in a polished way, and that's very weird that, but it's not polished crystal sometimes, or I don't see it like that. It's something incredibly intimate. And I was just wondering if that's where the presence comes, because you see, some people can write and they just write and it sounds so ordinary, and other people write like you are a gifted poet and you make it present as if it's going to hang in the air, like pearls hang on the necklace, right? It's going to just hang there and never disappear.
Yeah, that's the hope, of course, that those words will continue on in the same way that after you've hit that last chord by Beethoven on the piano, that it will hold in the air, after you've lifted your fingers from the keys. And that was one thing about my mother's piano that I just loved, the reverberation of the sound and how it would seemingly go off endlessly into space. And of course, that's every poet's hope, that those words will linger. Of course, we can't know that, which is one of the great glories of it as well, because it truly is a giving. You don't know what you're giving. You don't know if it will reach its source, but you do it anyway because you have faith. You have faith in the language itself, and you have faith in the world and the things of this world, which is what it's composed of, you know. And it's terrible because I can't think of the quote right now, but it's Whitman who talks about judging not as a god, but as how as a child, you know, judges, that a child sees everything as equal. They they don't yet they're not yet able to discern what is good and what is bad, you know, what is right, what is wrong. They just know the world. There's a wonderful poem by Gary Young in which his child holds up a stone and says, "What's this?" And his father says, it's a rock. And he holds it up again and says, "No, this, you know, what is it really? It's not just a rock. It's got to be something magical, you know. There must be a better word for it than rock." And so they're not judging that thing. It is infinite and everywhere, you know. It has no name, really. And so our task is to say those names and try to bring that thing, whatever it is, in our palm up into the light, and allow others to see it freshly and newly as something that is just nameless and eternal. So it's an odd conundrum, right? You know, I mean, the thing itself is more than the thing itself, and yet it's only the thing itself.
Right. It's one of those paradoxes, right? It's just a paradox. And I actually, when you were talking about Whitman and the quote of children, I was it flashed in front of my eyes, that beautiful scene from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, where the father needs money. And the, I don't know if you know that, but the children open their little treasure trove of things. And it's basically a rock and a little crown. And, you know, and he knows that it's only worth maybe a dime. And the kids are like, "No, Daddy, but we could have, you know, we could sell the jewels of the king." It's like, well, and we also have to realize, I think, the poets are really helping us with language, and also, of course, all writers. But songwriters, I have to say, as a songwriter myself, you know, although I'm really trying, there's not as much attention often going into the lyrics. We say rock and stone instead of saying granite and marble, maybe. So I had a guest on the show, and she was talking about how many of the words of nature are being taken out of the dictionaries to make room for the more technical terms. And I thought that was really sad, you know, like milkweed or yew tree, or I'm not sure if willow has been taken out yet, but... Did your mom have a grand piano, or did you have an upright?
She had an upright piano, and then later she got a grand piano. And, you know, I was, so we didn't have much, but my mother had a piano.
Beautiful. No, I remember lying underneath the grand piano. I used to build forts underneath pianos. I was wondering if you had that same... drive as a child.
No, it was too late for me, you know, by the time she worked up to that.
Yeah.
And of course it was a little baby, you know. But I was much older at that point. During our childhoods, it was just an upright but beautiful nonetheless. And she played organ in the church, and she had an organ for a while too, so.
So was it easy? Was it easy as a child to share your voice and your emotions and your writing, or was it a struggle? Your mom obviously got you connected to the music part and the beauty of rhythm and melody. But how was most kids don't fall in love with poetry, but did you do a lot of reading and as a child?
I did. My mother read quite a bit, and so I would read the adult novels that she had around the house. We had some Childcraft books, and I would read those voraciously. But what I really loved was taking one of her novels off a shelf and reading them, and, of course, understanding very little of what this adult story was about, but reading it nonetheless and just being amazed at the wonder of adulthood. You know? And it was a foreign world to me, with foreign creatures, you know, from an alien planet. And so I did read, but mostly what I read growing up was novels. She did have poetry. She had E.E. Cummings and Carl Sandburg and Robert Frost, who were the poets of the day. But I was less interested in them, actually, than I was in the novels, and the way that people spoke to each other and treated each other and the things they did. I loved plot and character and landscape and, you know. So the poetry came later. It was when I was older that I really became immersed in poetry. And but because I'd grown up on childhood rhymes, you know, Mother Goose, mm-hmm. and all those young childhood rhymes, which I also loved, the first time I sat down to write, I thought, well, I must write a poem because it needs to have music. You know, the words need to have music. And so mm-hmm. I wrote in metered and rhymed poetry for many, many years as a child. But I never showed it to anyone. I just tucked it under my mattress. And, it was a secret that I didn't want other people to know about. I don't know why, but it just was a secret life that I had as a child. I was the oldest, and so it was my way of having my own space in a house that was filled with children and noise and music and dirty laundry and, you know, things boiling over on the stove.
Well, they used to have those little books with the little tiny, tiny keys that would try to keep our thoughts secret, right? They mm-hmm. used to have these books mm-hmm. that you could buy with those tiny, yes. They probably still have them.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. I had one of those. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so we're going to take a very short station break, and then we're going to come back and dive even deeper into what it means to be a poet and the beauty of voice, language, rhythm, rhyme, being on the path.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
Why was the basketball court all wet?
Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
So we are back. I'm Cara Johnstad, and I am with the poet Dorian Lux. Lux, I'm going to practice this name. Beautiful name. Dorian, we left off with secret places and this feeling of privacy, and you've actually said that somewhere, that you said all art starts in a very secret place. How do we, if we're not sure of even approaching all those deep secrets that we might want to voice, how do we step into that secret space and explore it?
You know, some of us are, of course, I think most of us are forced into sort of a secret place in the sense that we really can't communicate everything that we feel. We want to. And for whatever reasons, we know that language is limited. And no matter how expansive it is, I mean, you were talking about the dictionary and how words are being taken away from us. I mean, we don't need fewer words. We need more words. There's, you know, to really be able to communicate what you feel inside to the outer world is impossible. It's difficult, but it's also really ultimately impossible. And because what we feel is too large, it's like the stone, you know, you can't say what this thing is. And but we try, you know, and that's, I think, that's something that both humbles me and gives me great compassion for human beings who have created this thing called language, you know, out of nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, out of really just nothing. We made this glorious thing called language, and yet it doesn't quite say what it is that we are trying to say ever. And so we all live in a secret space where we even speak to ourselves in language, and yet it doesn't translate, you know. And so it's a struggle, you know. Human beings are struggling with this imperfect thing that they made, you know, so that's the beginning of the secret space. And then on top of that, you probably have people who, you know, are impaired in one way or another, or are kept from speaking. I know when I was a child, there was a lot that went on in my family that was not particularly beautiful and lovely. And, you know, and I could not speak about the kinds of things that were happening in my home. And it was forbidden. It was a forbidden thing. And so whenever you forbid a human being to do something, that's the thing they want to do the most. And so I think that writing was my way of being able to speak out of that silence that was being imposed upon me.
Even if it stayed only for yourself, it gave you that sense of relief or freedom that even you, if it was only you that was listening to yourself, your higher self or your...
Yes.
Yeah, you've said that you went through some very, very difficult experiences growing up. And I believe you also said that you were raised by an abusive father.
Father, yes.
Yeah.
And so all the children were silenced in that way.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, of course, the logical outgrowth of that is that someday, when their backs are turned, when you get out of that place, you know, you're going to speak.
Right. I mean, I'm a voice coach. I work a lot with voices, and I find it fascinating that our root chakra, for women, that's, you know, the whole womb and pelvic area, you know, but in general, our root chakra, the whole existential chakra, is connected to the throat. And we have that even in language, that we have our cervical spine and our cervix, and we have the vagus nerve coming from the throat and the vagina. And we have the path mapped out even in words already, or a very rough path. But a lot of people don't realize that whenever we experience a lot of abuse, that the first thing that will go is our voice, often, because the muscles in our throat will close. The most important thing that we do have, which is our heart needs to beat and our lungs need to breathe. And that opening that's right above the heart and the lungs is our voice. And the voice is so incredibly connected, not only as a tool to express, but it's also a powerful tool to protect, right? So I was wondering what your experience is. You know, that's why people, they often shame themselves or they feel guilty that they've lost their voice, they've lost the inability or the ability to speak or sing or talk about the wounds. But the fact is that we have to be grateful that the voice in some ways protected us, because if we would have, as a child, right, if we would have, we wouldn't have been able to fight, and we wouldn't have been able to flee. What are you going to do, run away with your nickel in your pocket? And right, and so the voice somehow does shut us down until we're able to integrate all those many layers. What is your personal journey using poetry and writing to heal some of those wounds that are very difficult to touch on or very difficult to bring light to or, to bring to the surface? Or do you use writing in that way? Because you write many different types of poems, but have you used writing as a healing tool?
I have. I mean, earlier, after I did leave home, I continued to write, continued to keep journal entries, and many of those entries became very angry and very revealing of everything that had happened. I needed to write it down. It was like I needed to be a witness to this thing that had happened. I never wrote about it, of course, when I was at home. I mean, there was always the chance it could be found. And I don't even think I had the impulse to do that when I was living at home. But when I got away from it, it was like this, what happens when you have a nightmare and you're running from something and you're trying to scream and you can't. And that's got to be the worst nightmare that we all have, is the inability to scream and let others know that we're in danger. And it was as if I ran right out of the nightmare and was finally able to scream. And that's what I did for years on the page, was just kind of one long, loud note of incomprehension and anger and confusion. And that was good for me to be able to say that on the page. It was still quiet, you know, it was still quiet. It wasn't out loud, but it was out loud on the page and in my mind. And I felt like I needed to get it down and get it right and get it straight. Years after years of this, I was finally able to, through therapy, I was in therapy for 9 years, I think, and altogether. And it took me the first 3 years just to speak of what had happened in our family. And that's a long time to hold your tongue when someone's saying it's okay, you know. You can speak.
Well, that's
it
the
now.
That's a phenomenal
that protective
gift that we that protective thing. But also, I mean, I guess one of my visions of the world, because I'm able to support a lot of healing of the throat, also by understanding how the muscles work, so how they can freeze, right, and how we can help to facilitate that they open. I'm always like, wow, what an amazing amount of creative force we have as human beings if we do heal and then bring that force, that voice force, you know, not only, of course, we have the anger and the rage, but I heard something beautiful the other day that I always say lead with the heart and courage has, you know, cura and heart. But somebody pointed me to the fact that rage is in the word courage. And that, you know, stopped me for a moment to say, wow, rage is sometimes entering maybe even before we can even take those courageous steps. Or maybe it takes courageous steps, first of all, to name you know, the anger in, of course, in a safe place, you know, everybody on the show,
yeah.
we're not
yeah.
propagating that, you know, we go and scream at people or hurt anybody, right?
Right.
And we have to put it, a little disclaimer here. Do you use, you talk a little bit about the rites of passage. Do you use ritual and ceremony to set the stage for writing or to help maybe your students honor certain phases of their life that have been completed and certain phases where they may be going into or exploring new territories, new landscapes?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I have my own rituals for myself, but it's mm-hmm. sort of I take my cue from the rituals of daily life, you know, the world.
Mm-hmm.
When the sun hits a certain point in the windows, I say, oh, this is the time to write. When mm-hmm. the sun is coming through and at this angle, and things are kind of taking on that golden midday, you know, glow, or mm-hmm. And so, you know, or, oh, you know, the block is quiet, the birds aren't singing, there's no one leaf blowing, there's, you know, there are times that I identify during the day that are times to write, early in the morning, late at night. And it's generally when things are quiet, when that quietude comes over, not only the world, but then it extends itself to me as a gift. Oh, look, there's mm-hmm. this space. Mm-hmm. that's opened, and I can step into it if I so desire. You know, that's the mm-hmm. gift the world gives me, and I either partake of it or I don't. I go back to sleep, you know. But most of the time I try to step into it. With my students, we often write together as a group. We will give ourselves a little exercise. We'll say, oh, here are 10 words and a phrase and a color, and let's just write, you know, let's all just mm-hmm. be quiet for 20 minutes and write together. And it's a lovely, lovely time in the workshop when everyone feels connected and that they're all doing the same thing and they're sharing in this silence and they're also sharing in their internal lives quietly with others. It's a very moving experience to have in the classroom, and it probably is the most bonding moment that they have together, and also creates incredible trust between them, that they're able mm-hmm. to sit next to each other and each write their own truths in poetic fashion. Of course, you know, we're focusing on language and image and sound
mm-hmm.
and, you know, all these craft things that they've learned, but they're also going deep into their core while sitting next to someone else who is also going deep into their core.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of become our ritual as a classroom, that we take time out every day to be quiet and just write with each other. And then people are free to share anything they've written or not, depending on how they feel. Yeah.
No pressure, right? I think that's so important that people... are able, right, that we know also as teachers that we hold space for each other, but there's no, you know, forced revealing.
No.
I think that is just so important because in the school system, often we were, you know, told to stand up in front and talk or share. And then not even as if that was enough, we would get graded, right? How did you stand? How did you wiggle? How did you,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah, and I think what's always amazing is that you can give the room full of people the same 10 words. And
mm-hmm.
and just like everybody has the same two eyes and two ears and a nose.
Yeah.
And at the same time, all the poems come out differently. That is such a mystery.
It's so beautiful. Yeah, yeah. It's like watching... you know, snowflakes fall, you know, every single one of them is its own thing, you know, and yet they're all looking the same at a distance, but up close, they're very, very different. And, I love it. That's my favorite time of teaching, when I'm not teaching, when they're teaching themselves.
Do you wake up, do you have a writing practice every single day, or do you really allow yourself that muse to come and kiss you on the nose?
Yeah, you know, I used to when I was younger, and especially when I started writing more seriously and trying to learn the craft of poetry and reading other poets. I'd get up every day, I'd read some poems, I'd sit down and write. I would, you know, give myself so much time, and it was the same time every day. And then as I grew as a poet, and also as my life became more complicated, it became, number one, impossible, but number two, I didn't need to have that much structure anymore. I had developed the discipline in myself. And so now I, like I say, you know, the world just sort of offers me moments in which to write. And I have complete faith that something will come forward. I'm not sure if it will be successful, but it will come forward. You know?
It'll flow through you. You will be sung. You will sung through. And do you always, do you write and then recite, or do you recite later, or are you singing and speaking inside of your head when you write? Because like I said at the beginning of the show, you have this beautiful ability to create rhythm and melody and really allow the poetry wants to be spoken. It longs to be spoken. Yes. It's begging us to speak it.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad you feel that way because, it, as I say, it's so important to me. And yet, when I write, you know, none of that enters in. As not only is the day quiet, but I am quiet. When I go into a writing sort of trance, and that's all the only thing I can think to call it is, when you're writing, you leave your body. You are no longer thinking. You're no longer speaking to yourself the way that we do when we walk around the house and say, oh, don't forget your keys, and oh, what did I say last night? That was dumb. And, you know, your mind quiets, and you're really, it's just absolute silence, and you're writing into it. And I think of nothing. I don't think of craft. I don't think of music. I don't think of anything. And that's what's so wonderful about it, is that I am just a entity. I am just light in the world, you know. And when I finish the poem, or when I finish writing and I kind of look up, I realize I've forgotten that I am a human being living in a house and, you know, on the eastern coast of America, in somewhere in the world, somewhere in the universe. You know, I've lost myself that much in the writing. But when I wake up, I say, oh, well, that was a bad word choice. And, oh, well, I could do this. Or, I could, you know, then I start becoming a crafts person. And I go back and refine and refine and refine. But beautiful. During the actual writing, I am not in this world. I'm in another world that no longer has language. I'm inventing it as I write.
Beautiful. Dorianne, we're going to take a short break and be back for more Golden Nuggets with Dorianne Knox.
Conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Hi. Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
I'm Cara Johnson. We're back here at Voice Rising with Dorianne Lux and talking all about poetry and truth, I guess, and rituals and all those good things. And I was wondering what your experience is. The voice has many different layers. It has the layers of belief systems and intent and thoughts, and has the layer of the writing, the writer's voice, the journaling, the speaking voice, and the singing voice, of course. And it all creates this vibrational signature that we carry. And it seems to me, but I'm an explorer, so I'm open to hear your thoughts. It seems to me like the closer we get to our own truth and really understanding that vibrational signature, like you said, like each of us are our own little snowflake, everybody unique and very important for the resonance and the harmony of this world. It seems like we're more vibrantly alive the closer we touch on it, that we dare to tap into the essence of who we are. Is that your experience?
Yes, I think so. I think through writing, I was able to, I think I was trying to answer that question, who am I? I was seeking myself, you know, who am I alone here in this world without my family, my history, my culture, my, you know, just who am I? And what do I want to do with this wild and precious life, as Mary Oliver would say? And the more that I wrote and the closer that I got to the truth of who I was and what my voice was now that it had been released, the more confident I became in being in the world, the more confident I became of my value as a being in the world, and the more confident I became in being able to reach other people and touch other people and have them touch me and be the thing, you know, embody the thing that I had always longed for, which was understanding and compassion and love and caring and, you know, all those things that I felt that I lacked and that I needed in order to live as a human being. And so, yeah, it led me to health. And the poems, one by one, you know, were building blocks to create this self that I have become, that I feel much more confident in than I did when I first stepped out of that door.
Yeah, and funny how the word confident is also nestled inside it as the word to confide. So it's maybe in that safety of confiding our secrets without judgment that we're freed, that we're liberated.
I finally found that quote by Whitman, and it's funny because it doesn't say anything about a child, but I think that the two words that it ends with in my mind connotate the child that I was. The quote is, the poet judges not as a judge judges, but as the sun falling around a helpless thing.
Mm. That's beautiful.
So that's Walt Whitman. Yes. Yeah, so there is, it's just the sun takes everything in equally. And, you know, the helpless as well as the powerful. But I think that helpless thing was what I felt that I was when I was within the confines of the family. But outside of it, I began to find that I was just as worthy under the sun as every stone, tree, and rabbit, and bird, and human being.
Do you know? Power. Yeah, you do have power, and I believe that your new book is called "Only as the Day is Long." Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Do you know, or would you be able to read that poem for us? I know I caught you quite by the surprise, but I thought maybe you might have it by heart. I have it printed out here, but would you like to read it?
Sure, I have the book right here. Only as the day is long is a phrase that my mother, well, she used to say, you know, something like, well, you know, yes, she's fine, only as the day is long. It was usually not a compliment. And but I never really was quite sure what it meant. But I kind of fell in love with the phrase. And when she died, it came back to me in full force. So this is only as the day is long. Soon she will be no more than a passing thought, a pang, a timpani of wind in the chimes, bent spoons hung from the eaves on a first night in a new house on a block where no dog sings. No cat visits a neighbor cat in the middle of the street, winding and rubbing fur against fur, throwing sparks. Her atoms are out there, circling the earth, minus her happiness, minus her grief, only her body's water atoms, her hair and bone and teeth atoms, her fleshy atoms, her boozy atoms, her saltines and cheese and tea, but not her piano concerto atoms, her atoms of laughter and cruelty, her atoms of lies and lilies along the driveway, and her slippers, Lord, her slippers, where are they now?
Lord, her slippers, where are they now? Exactly. All those atoms. It's a very powerful poem, and I was having, well, I wanted to ask you another very bizarre question because I thought I could just ask you anything and that you'd be, you know, stuttering or not, and I'd be lucky.
I love your questions. You're so, so attuned to language and sound. I love it.
What do you think? I have this theory that the universe is expanding, and my theory is, and nobody's been able to answer why the universe continues to expand, and I am sure as a singer and poet and songwriter that it has to do with voice, because whenever I get into a car and then, you know, people start playing Elvis Presley or Nina Simone or Billie Holiday, and the dead people are dancing, all these atoms and atoms of dead people, and then I go to the library and pick up Rilke or whatever, and I'm sure that it's those poets that we can continue to read and ingest and ingest until we think that our belly's going to explode and all this stuff. So I was wondering what you think happens to the voice, the vibrational frequency, when we kick off, when we die.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I mean, you alluded to this before, you know, the poets. Poems are what they leave their voice to the world.
Right.
I mean, you know, others leave a garden or they leave, you know, you know, the gift of their antique car to their son, or they, you know, they leave other kinds of things, but poets leave their voices, and their hope is that they will continue to reverberate, and stay in those wavelengths that travel, you know, not just around the world, but throughout the universe and into eternity. And
because they're immortal in a way, right? I mean, if you think of Callas as immortal and Whitman is immortal, and the voices seem to never die.
Yeah, I mean, I have a poem, I think it's called Crow, in which I say something like, every time the heater comes on, it sounds for all the world like my mother clearing her throat and then sighing. And my mother's voice is something that even before her face will come to me. You know, the sound of her voice, that timbre, that, you know, her tenor. And I have her voice. In fact, when people speak to me, they say, you sound just like your mother. It's something that is genetic that we pass on from, you know, everyone in my family, all the women sound like my mother. That just seems impossible. How could your voice sound like another's voice? Because it's just waves, you know. I don't know what the physics of that would be. I do know there's an actual physics to our atoms that they never leave, that when human beings die, their atoms really are, you know, they just enter the world of atoms. And it's very comforting to think that all the atoms of everyone who's ever lived are still here, and we breathe them in every day.
Right. The same air that Marilyn Monroe or
yes.
I don't know, whoever.
Or Socrates.
We have it. We're carrying that.
Socrates.
We're walking with that and creating with that. It's it for me, it's just mind-blowing sometimes, the beauty.
It is mind-blowing. Yeah.
It's the beauty
of it. It is. It's the ultimate beauty of it all is that we're never not together. And, you know, again, as Whitman said, what's good belongs to me belongs to you. And I feel sometimes if people could see that through poetry, that we in fact do all, you know, come from the same seed, there would be much less contention in the world, if that's the word you want to use for what's going on in the world right now. But, you know, poetry, I think, does desire to unite. That's what it's meant to do. How that voice works in terms of, like you say, this ever-expanding universe, I have no idea. I know that recently I got a letter from a professor of chemistry who had read the poem Only as the Day is Long and mm-hmm. had written me a note about how he had read the poem to his class to then talk about the idea of the atom and what it does after we die. And he says, even as entropy erases, even the passing thought and the pang, as the timpani of wind and the chimes degrades to the condition of low temperature heat, those atoms still circle the earth to be breathed in and out, become parts of archival documents, the eyes of caterpillars, the messengers of our very thoughts and consciousness. And so it was just so wonderful to think that, you know, a chemist looked at that poem and thought about it in terms of science and how the reality, that is a true reality in the world. So maybe you can find someone who can confirm your idea about the voice and that it in fact does.
The universe expanding, right? I just think that the atoms stay, the atoms obviously, right? That's the interesting thing. The atoms keep on circulating, but the vibration, anyway, it's a theory. I think you're correct. Poetry, you know, so many of our arts are there to unite and heal humanity. What is your vision as, you know, you talked often about this feeling of being a light and being almost in a trance and understanding the role that we carry. All of us have a voice and have a gift for this world, each and every human being. So what is your vision as we come to a close of this wonderful time together for the world? What would you love to see happen amidst all the mayhem?
Well, you know, that's a big question.
I know. That's why I did the little writer's exercise and gave you 120 seconds.
Boy, what do I wish? I wish that people, I really have faith in language. You know, I have faith that we can communicate with each other. And as difficult as it is that we're struggling to do that, every day I see us as a nation here in the United States, but also as a world trying to speak to each other and understand each other, even though it goes very, very wrong, right? You know, so many times it takes a wrong turn. And language has been used, in fact, as a weapon, as a way to obfuscate and you know, keep us from each other. And but I just keep hoping that the sword will shift, you know, and that we'll walk on the blade rather than,
And they'll understand the powerful tool that we have with words to uplift and to heal and to unite the beauty of language, right? It's like fire. It can warm our hearts and it can also destroy.
I heard a wonderful story the other day about a young girl who sat next to a bully in her classroom. And she always avoided looking at him. And one day the teacher read them a poem, and the boy turned to her and smiled after the end of the poem. And so there was that moment of communication brought together by language.
Beautiful. Dorian, it was beyond a pleasure. It was actually one of my dreams come true. I think you're an amazing poet. I thank you so much for all the contributions that you give to our world, and I hope to have you back on the show at some time again.
Oh, thank you so much, Kara. This has just been a delight. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.